You're listening to the Family Podcast from PursueGod.org.
Hey friends, Pastor Brian here. Welcome to the Family Podcast. Tracy's taking a break this week, and I'm in the studio with two good friends, Carson and Andrea, who are also doctors, who are also married, who are also pregnant. All of this is so pertinent. You're the perfect guest for today's episode because we're talking about birth control options. So before we get into all that, why don't you guys introduce yourselves?
Awesome. Thanks, Brian. So my name's Andrea Morley. I went to med school in Chicago at Loyola, which is a Jesuit university, and then moved out to Phoenix for residency. Carson and I met out here in residency during our intern year. We both completed internal medicine and pediatrics residency just last year in 2024. And then I now am doing a primary care sports medicine fellowship. So my active practice is a combination of both of those, primary care medicine as well as sports medicine.
Carson, what about you?
Yeah, so I'm Carson. I did medical school at the University of Utah, and as Andrea mentioned, came down to Phoenix for residency where we did internal medicine and pediatrics. I have pursued additional training and am currently a fellow in pediatric critical care.
So, okay. So Andrea, if a young couple who's listening to this, a young married couple, walk into your office and say, we don't want to get pregnant yet. We just got married. We don't want to get pregnant yet. What are our options? Like what is the typical, this is what we're going to do today, is we're going to talk about what the answer is to that, but then we're going to take kind of a deeper dive to make sure that for biblical Christians, that young couples are making the right choice about birth control.
Yeah, so super common reason for young women to come into the doctor is to discuss birth control. And I've had the opportunity to have this discussion with both believers and non-believers in my primary care practice. And I think it's a really unique opportunity for physicians to really get to know their patients. And as far as birth control methods goes, the conversation usually centers around what we call combined oral contraception, which is a combination of both estrogen and progestin. That's the daily pill, or progestin-only methods, which can be in pill form, can be intrauterine devices, can be every 3 month injections, can be an implant. And we also include the barrier methods, both female and male condoms. The context of the conversation is usually amongst women who don't currently want to get pregnant, but are planning on seeking out pregnancy in the future. So we less so focus on other options such as sterilization via tubal ligation or vasectomy.
Now, when Tracy and I were in this place years ago, the options basically were condoms or the pill. Tracy was on the pill, but I want to say maybe 10, 15, maybe you guys know more info about this. 10, 15 years ago, there was some question about whether the pill is something that Christians should take. So let's just kind of set this conversation up real quick, because this is what we want to answer today, are any of these options abortive? And will doctors, you're going to help us understand, we're going to do a little biology lesson in just a minute here. You're going to help us to understand this at a little bit of a deeper level. But before we get into any of that, I think we should just acknowledge, like, the Bible clearly says abortion's wrong. From our, you know, we believe that's what God's word says. We're pro-lifers. So that's the approach we're trying to take here. But we're not taking necessarily like an approach that maybe a Catholic would take, which is that any kind of birth control at all is inappropriate. We should just let God do his thing. Andrea, I thought maybe you could start with some of those terms about, because having grown up Catholic, I think you understand this as well. Now, as an evangelical Christian, I think you understand this probably better than the average person.
Yeah, so I think to begin, we can talk about how the Bible cites both a unitive and procreative purpose for marriage. And Catholics and some who are not Catholic believe that those two purposes are inseparable, that all intimacy within marriage should have the possibility of creating a child or bringing life into this world associated with it. And I got to see this in practice when I was training at Loyola. You are not allowed to just simply prescribe birth control for contraceptive purposes, and OB-GYNs in practice there are unable to perform sterilization procedures, again, with the primary purpose being preventing pregnancy without any other medical indication. So, yeah, so from a Protestant or evangelical perspective, we are talking here in the context that there are many scripturally founded purposes of marriage, two of the main ones being unity and procreation, and that there are various points within the marriage in which one or the other will be prioritized.
So can I try, I'm going to be doing this a lot in this episode. I'm going to try to summarize what you just said for the average person. Tell me if I've got this right. As evangelical Christians, then we say that intimacy within marriage doesn't always have to be with the purpose of procreation. So in other words, as evangelicals, you feel the same way that my wife and I do about this. Like, we think that it's okay to have sex and still not have the intention of procreating, in other words, using birth control, as long as the birth control method used is not abortive. So this is, I think, where we need to go to you, Dr. Morley, the other Dr. Morley, Carson. Carson, help give us a little bit of a bio. I think this is where we're going to get to. At some point, we're going to really get to these options, especially the IUD versus the pill. Are either of those abortive at all? To really get the background for understanding that, Carson, you might need to bring us back to ninth grade or whenever it is that we all learned about the reproductive system. Explain the process of reproduction.
So I think it would be helpful to do some brief anatomy and physiology. So I'll try and define terms as I go. Anatomically, the relevant parts of the anatomy that we'll be discussing is primarily the birth tract. That includes the vagina, the cervix, which is the bottom of the uterus, the body of the uterus itself, and the fallopian tubes, as well as a number of other glands that I'll mention here in a moment. Physiologically, reproduction is a complex system of feedback loops where the body communicates with different parts of itself by the use of hormones. So the main glands that are involved in the reproductive process would be first the pituitary gland, which is a small gland at the base of the brain, and then the gonads, which in males would be the testicles, and in females, the ovaries. The pituitary gland, sometimes referred to as the master gland, secretes a number of hormones. Specifically relevant to our conversation would be two hormones called FSH, or follicle stimulating hormone, and LH, or luteinizing hormone. So when the pituitary hormones, FSH and LH, communicate with the ovary, it tells them to do a number of different things. Specifically, it tells the ovary to produce two hormones of its own, namely estrogen and progesterone. Estrogen is the primary female hormone, and it's responsible for the physical development of female characteristics, so breast development, things like that. Progestin, the name itself means progestation or pregnancy, is responsible for making the uterus an optimal place for conception and implantation. After receiving a signal from the pituitary gland, the ovary will release an egg in that process we discussed earlier called ovulation. That egg will then be taken up into the fallopian tube, which is typically the place where conception or fertilization occurs. When we say those terms, conception or fertilization, what we're referring to is the joining of the sperm and the egg, creating a full genetic profile of a new human being. That fertilized egg then continues down the fallopian tube into the uterus, where it implants into the uterine wall, and that pregnancy can then continue on.
So to help people understand, if you're like what we would consider biblical, appropriate, ethical birth control would be anything that is pre-fertilization. So with all that in mind, I mean, I think that's a great simple explanation of what we're talking about without getting too into the weeds on the in the doctor speak. So Andrea, then help us to understand now those two main things we're talking about are the pill and IUDs, right? Help us to understand that ethically.
Yeah. So I think the methods of contraception that we'll focus on today are the combined oral contraception, which is both estrogen and progesterone, and that is a daily pill, as well as the progestin-only methods, which can come in the form of pill, implant, vaginal ring, injection, or intrauterine device. So both of these options have distinct mechanisms of action. The combined oral contraception, the daily pill that has both estrogen and progestin, works to inhibit ovulation. So it prevents the ovary from releasing the egg and therefore prevents the opportunity for fertilization when intimacy occurs. The progestin-only methods focus more so on altering the chemical components of the cervical mucus to decrease sperm motility. They can also affect ovulation, but it's more so on the scale of preventing maybe half of your cycles from being ovulatory. And then the barrier methods physically prevent all of that from happening. So the important thing to remember, too, is it's a well-known fact that none of these birth control options are 100% effective. There's always the chance for either breakthrough ovulation while on combined oral contraception or fertilization despite cervical mucus changes with progestin-only methods. So, for example, the combined oral contraceptive is quoted as having a 93% success rate at preventing fertilization, whereas the progestin-only methods have a 99% success rate in that. Barrier methods, such as condoms, have about an 87% success rate in preventing fertilization.
And that would be because that the condom failed?
Probably.
Yeah, okay. Okay, so, you know, for the couple that's listening saying, okay, so what should we do? Which one should we use? Is the pill, therefore, a good method? Like, how confident can a couple be? You know, when Tracy and I, we used the pill before we were ready to get pregnant. We didn't even have any information about this. We just went with the assumption that this is good. This is not abortion. This isn't like what we would say today, maybe is even the morning after pill, which we could even talk about that, I think, a little bit today. So, Carson, how about for you? Like, maybe you can address the pill. Is the pill... does the pill have a chance of taking effect after fertilization?
That's a good question, Brian. And before I get into that, I just wanted to make one point of clarification. There can be some confusing terminology when it comes to oral contraceptives. There are both what we refer to as combined oral contraceptives, which include both estrogen and progestin-only pills. There are other progestin-only methods that Andrea mentioned earlier, but let's talk about the oral contraception. So with regards to combined oral contraceptive methods, the data does not suggest that those are abortifacients. The main mechanism by which oral combined contraceptive pills work is by suppressing ovulation. There are some secondary mechanisms as well, including thickening of cervical mucus and preventing sperm from reaching the egg, but the primary method is by inhibiting ovulation. So if we think back to that process I described earlier, that is before fertilization. It prevents there from even being an egg to be fertilized in the first place, and thus that would not be an abortifacient.
What if ovulation does occur? Andrew, you mentioned that it's not 100% successful. So if ovulation does occur, could it then be abortifacient?
Yeah. So there was a third proposed mechanism of action for combined oral contraceptives, which was thinning and reducing vascularity of the endometrial lining, creating basically an inhospitable environment for an embryo to implant. However, this was removed from the package labeling in 2022 as the evidence did not support that. So if there is breakthrough ovulation when you're using a combined oral contraceptive pill, then an egg is released, sperm can come fertilize that egg, the embryo can then travel from the fallopian tubes into the uterus, and the body overrides the temporary physiologic changes of the pill in order to create a hospitable environment for that embryo. So because of that data, the mechanism of creating a thin endometrial lining was removed, which leaves us with the understanding that combined oral contraceptive pills do not affect the fertilized Egsberg product.
Okay, that's good. That's actually really encouraging for me to hear, because we, like I said, we use the pill, and we'll at the very end of this episode, we'll get your personal kind of conviction about this as a young couple still in child rearing years. But before we do that, Andrea, maybe you can speak to then the IUD. So we talked about the pill. What about the IUD?
Yeah. So options aside from combined oral contraceptive pills. So a lot of people are familiar with the IUD, but that actually is just one component of a bigger category of progestin-only contraceptive methods. So there are several of these. There's implants that you can get, like a subcutaneous implant that'll systemically release progestin. There's intravaginal rings that will cause local secretion of progestin. The IUD is another form of local secretion of progestin, the intrauterine device, that is. And then there's also the injection, which is an intramuscular injection of progestin that slowly releases over 3 months. So as far as how all of these progestin-only birth control methods work, in contrast to what we described with the combined oral contraceptive, these progestin-only methods work by thickening cervical mucus, making it difficult for sperm to enter into the uterus or fallopian tube and fertilize the egg. There's physiologic changes to the cervical mucus that alters the sperm motility as a mechanism of preventing fertilization. There, again, is one option amongst this group that stands out a little bit. So, as I mentioned before, the injection, the implant, and the progestin-only pill are systemically releasing progestin. The ring is a local release intravaginally, and the IUD is a local release intrauterine. The one that stands out amongst all of these is the intrauterine device. Again, all of these progestin-only methods work primarily by thickening and altering the chemical physiology of cervical mucus. However, there is a theory that the intrauterine device also works by creating a local inflammatory reaction within the uterus itself. So this really is the biggest sticking point for those who want to choose a birth control method that strictly acts prior to fertilization. Knowing all of this, there is the possibility that the intrauterine device can create an inhospitable environment due to the local inflammation that it creates within the uterus for that embryo to implant.
In other words, there's a possibility that the IUD option could actually be abortive.
Correct.
Now, is this newer information in the medical field? Is this still a part of studies? I mean, how confident can we be about this?
Yeah, I personally don't know what data is out there in regards to the validity of that mechanism of action. So I don't think I can say at this time. I don't know that it's a new concept in the medical literature, but it's probably something that still has conflicting data.
But if a young couple goes into their doctor and says, what are my options? The doctor might not be this specific. Would you say that's true?
Yes, definitely.
I think it's also important to note that depending on the source that you're looking at, there may be different definitions of what constitutes an abortifacient and what does not. The FDA does not consider intrauterine devices as abortifacient because they prevent implantation. And that is not the definition that we defined at the start of the podcast.
Right. Yeah. Because as biblical Christians, we're not talking about implantation only. We're not looking at it from a secular point of view. We're looking at it from a biblical point of view. We're saying conception.
Yeah. I personally had the IUD prior to us deciding that we wanted to have children. And I was under the impression that the primary mechanism of action was to suppress ovulation. And in further looking into the data, yes, it can occasionally suppress ovulation, but most cycles are actually ovulatory for women with IUDs, and that the main mechanism of action is actually more so focused on the cervical mucus, as I mentioned prior. So throughout preparing for this podcast, it was new information to me that there is a third proposed mechanism of local inflammation that could impact the implantation of a fertilized egg.
And you said that that was true of the IUD. Was that true of the other progestin-only options?
No, it's not. Only the one that is intrauterine. So both the progestin-only IUD as well as the copper IUD.
So the other progestin-only options, would you say then, are not abortifacient from a biblical perspective?
Correct.
Okay, so all this to say, as a couple now, I know a lot of couples are listening to this, maybe even couples that chose the IUD, Andrea, like you did before you had even this, even as a doctor, before you had this information. That's why this, to me, was such an important topic to get out here on the podcast. How do you guys land on this once you have your baby, once you guys are ready again to consider your options for birth control? I mean, have you guys kind of processed this personally?
Yeah, so I think before discussing how I'm going to think about this going forward, I just want to give personal insight into my experience with birth control. So I've been on birth control for the past, I think, about 10 years of my life. Started on the combined oral contraceptive pill, had some pretty bad side effects, which unfortunately are common, usually related to the estrogen component, migraines, depression. So decided to switch from the combined estrogen progestin pill to the progestin only intravaginal ring. And I used that for several years before then deciding to get the IUD inserted, which was an interesting experience. A lot of people, I'm sure, listening potentially have had an IUD and know that that's not necessarily a simple decision to make. But so, you know, knowing that, I just want to continue to emphasize that the birth control decision, the method that you choose, if you're going to choose to use birth control, is really personal. Everybody responds to these different methods in different ways. So I think knowing your body and going through some trial and error amongst the process is not wrong. And I think that also highlights just the importance of having this conversation with a physician who you trust, who ideally even you share values with, who can help you make the best decision for you. So going forward, I do now have some hesitation about getting an IUD again because of the potential that there is a abortifacient component with the local inflammation that is potentially created in the uterus itself. I really have been challenged to kind of reflect on if I want to pursue, continue using birth control after we have our baby, and if so, what type. And I want to end too just by saying that using birth control, there's been a lot of emotionally sensitive discussion that we've had around this decision. I, looking back, would definitely choose to use birth control again. For me, it was a very positively quality of life change. And I don't think that that's something to minimize. For women who have heavy or painful periods, getting on birth control can drastically impact your quality of life. So I definitely would choose to do it again, both because it really improved the symptoms that I was having, but also because once I did get married and then we did discuss having children, I really wanted to focus on just establishing the foundation of our marriage and to really just allow for space for me to prepare for motherhood. So I do think that it's permissible to be wise in your timing about having children when in a Christian marriage.
I would echo everything Andrea said. The real question that we're asking here is, how should we as Christians think about this, and how can we honor God in our decision making? I want to reemphasize the importance of what Andrea said, is that this is something that should be discussed between husband and wife. This should be something that you seek guidance from God and seek wise counsel in your lives. So talk about this topic with people who can pour truth into you. On a more personal level, this concept has always been particularly near and dear to my heart because I was adopted. I myself was a product of an unplanned pregnancy. And at the time, my birth mom could have very easily chose a different route other than life. So I know that the topic of this podcast is not specifically abortion, but I think that this topic and abortion all come back to the sanctity of life and us being created in God's image. So our heart and our goal in having this conversation today is to help you as young couples think through these difficult questions from a biblical perspective. We hope that this has served as a tool that you can think back to when you're sitting in that doctor's office and they're giving you guidance and recommendations. And we hope that this allows you to think through these things in a biblical, God-honoring way. I also think it's important to recognize that ultimately God's will be accomplished. The Bible teaches us that we can make our plans, but ultimately the Lord determines our steps. And so our primary goal in this should be walking with Jesus, doing what's honoring to Him, and honoring the sanctity of life, life that is created in God's image.
Thanks for listening. If you haven't already, please consider rating our podcast. It's a simple way to help us reach more people. Find more resources to talk about these topics with your small group, family, or mentor on pursuegod.org.